Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today is part two of our interview with Joe and Rosanna, two female APs. We're taping both shows back to back, and right now I don't know when they will air, but if you'd like this, go back a week or three in the archives and you'll find the other one. Joe and Rosanna, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Nice to see you.
Thank you. Good to be back.
When you started,
I just want to say before we start that we're drinking again. This is a cheers. This is a show with our experiment cheers. With cheers. A bottle of wine while we record the show. Cheers. Cheers.
Let them know if it's better or not.
Yeah.
I guess better, I don't have anything to compare
better
it to.
Or even more better.
It's when he says we're drinking again, what he means is we're drinking still.
Yeah, right. By again.
Right. All right. So when you started in the AP process, there must have been test. What kind of test did you take? And I assume you passed. Rosanna.
Well, one of the tests was waiting till we drank a lot and then asking us about the test, which no, that's what you just did. As I mentioned before, I thought I was prepared when I got to my first blackjack trip, which was here in Vegas. And, you know, I had basic strategy down. I had been dealing to myself. I had memorized, you know, high, low count, you know, I had it down to 20 seconds for in a deck. And I come to Vegas and I realized that I was way out of my league. And I was just scared. I was scared they would reject me because everyone was so serious. And Joe had prepared me a little bit for the intensity of the team and the team, which they had a house basically that they used as a headquarters, and there was nothing in the house but blackjack tables and beds basically to sleep on, and everyone was just practicing all day every day, either practicing or checking out or working on advanced strategies. I mean, there was no TVs in the house, there was nothing else but cards. And so I got there and, you know, I didn't know anyone. Joe wasn't there. She was the only person I knew on the team, and she wasn't there on that trip, so I didn't know anyone. It was literally like cloak and dagger, you know, call this number when you get to the airport, someone will pick you up and they'll drive you to this place. And
that's exactly
right. It was exactly what happened, and everyone was very friendly, you know, they were very welcoming immediately. And I get to the house and I thought, you know, I'd have a chance to settle in, you know, think about things and practice on my own. And they just took me straight to a blackjack table. They said, okay, are you ready to play? Let's go. Let's start. Let's see how you're doing. Let's, you know, test your skills like immediately. And so I was so nervous, and but I went for it. I said, you know, this is what I'm here for. So I'm in it. And I immediately, it was kind of apparent to them, I'm sure, I'm looking back immediately, that I didn't, I wasn't up to par yet, but they were just dealing me shoes. So the checkout process for new players was you had to go through and play two hands. You didn't have to bet anything. It was, you're just basically training to be a spotter, which was to count the cards, you know, have a accurate running count, and then call in the BP when it got to a certain point. So you had to have speed and you had to play perfect basic strategy for five shoes in a row. And I think you could miss one or two basics. You couldn't miss any basic strategy. Basic strategy miss was an automatic fail, but you could be off by one or two in your account, I think, for the whole five shoes. So it was very strict. I failed over and over again. My first weekend there, I didn't pass. I was for the whole weekend, and I thought for sure they would not want me to come back, and they would just send me on my way. But I think that the fact that
were they doing anything to distract you?
I was going to say,
that was just the technical part. At the same time, yeah, they were simulating a casino environment. So
this was an extreme casino environment.
Actually good, because later on it was useful as a woman, you know, being talked to all the time and, you know, cocktail waitresses coming up and giving you your order. Like, so they would simulate that. They would have someone coming up and would you like a drink, ma'am? Would you like a drink? And they wouldn't leave until you answered. You had to actually.
Or they'd ask you numbers.
You couldn't ignore them. You know, the dealer would be constantly talking. So whoever was dealing would just call out everything as the dealer sometimes does. You know, they call out
scores.
16, 15. Okay, you hit, you got a 17. And then they would also, make a lot of errors because, you know, in real life, the dealers make errors. And I was actually, I was listening to the podcast you guys had a couple weeks ago with, I think that person, Yoshi, and he said, he told a story about how he was shortchanged at the table when he colored up and he didn't realize it until, because he just hadn't counted and wasn't paying attention. And then he went to the cage and luckily they shortchanged him by $2,000 or something. They ran after him and they gave him that money. But that happens in the casino all the time. Dealers make errors. Just last night we were playing just really fun playing at a blackjack table and the dealer called out the wrong hand totals
twice.
And because he was a newer dealer and he said 17 when it was 18 or something, you know, and so they would do that as part of our testing. The dealers would call out random hand totals. They'd call out every one of your hands. They would say 16 and it would actually be 14. I mean, they would call out every hand wrong. They would change you. They would pay you wrong. You didn't have to bet yourself, but you had to pay attention to what, how much, actually, maybe this was later. Later when you're a controller, you had to pay attention to the BP, how much he was getting paid. Because if they shortchanged him, it was the responsibility of everyone to make sure that he was being paid out correctly. So they would pay out.
Or better.
They would pay out in lammers. They would pay out wrong all the time on a blackjack. And so you had to be aware of everything. And so the idea was if everyone's eyes are on it, then we're going to catch every mistake because those could be really costly. And they could be in your favor too. So if they gave them overpayment, you had to not say anything because you're not supposed to find out. If you get overpaid, it's kind of like, it's on the casino, you know, if they overpay you. I mean,
sure.
It's not really our fault. Of course, if they point it out and they find out, we can give it back. But so the basic test was pretty rigorous. Then there's different levels of tests based on, you know, the BPs had their own test and the controllers had their own test.
But what happened? You said you thought you would not be invited back.
Oh, yeah. So I was invited back, even though I didn't pass, because they could see that I was on the verge of passing. I mean, that's all I did all weekend. I did not leave that house the whole weekend. I had imagined I would be going out to play blackjack and all I did was hear, because there was, you know, about 20 or 30 people on this trip and they had different people going out to different sessions at different casinos. And I was stuck at the house just practicing, which was fine with me because that's all I wanted to do was check out and play. And I just kept hearing all these stories from all the people coming back to the house and, you know, oh, we got kicked out here or this happened and we made 50, we made 80, like all these numbers. And I was just amazed. And I just knew that I wanted in on this. And,
were you the only person that was checking out?
No, I think it was me and I think there was one other person who was trying to check out and it took him a while too. And, he did, I think he passed before me. So we were kind of in it together and I saw that he was we were both making progress and they saw that I was nearly there. And so I was invited back. They had another, trip planned. We used to come to Vegas all the time. And so yeah, my second trip is when I passed, I think. It was definitely not the first trip. I just definitely knew, even though I hadn't passed, it's the first time I ever really failed in anything that I tried to do. So it was almost that challenge.
Another lesson in life.
Yeah, it was just that challenge of like, I'm not going to fail at this. Like I was so determined that, you know, I went from not wanting any, not even knowing that card counting was a thing to all of a sudden, this was all I wanted to do. And just because it just seemed, I don't know, it just seemed like I belonged there somehow. I don't know.
Yeah.
So Joe, when you were being tested,
yeah,
how was your experience similar or different than Rosanna?
Similar. It was the same initial test. It was incredibly intense, which I'm very grateful for because it set the foundation, you know, the fundamentals, which is really important. And of course, as Rosanna pointed out, it got a little bit harder as we needed to develop our skills, but there were so many distractions. I think cigarette smoke? Were they smoking in the house at the time?
I don't remember.
Recall smoke going everywhere. Yes. And, you know, there were numerous people yelling at the same time. Numbers, sports scores. I mean, some people really took it to an extreme level. And like Rosanna said, you couldn't make any basic errors. And see, now it's easy. I think we could do it in our sleep. But at that point, it's for the people listening who are really advanced players, I know this must sound pretty basic to you. But for people who are listening who don't have any actual AP experience, you know, it's incredibly challenging. And there's so many different levels of what you need to do to really get good. So this initial level for us was so difficult. It took days also for me to pass, and you have to do a number of shoes back to back. It's an endurance test. It's like a sport, really.
And then you also had to count down just with your hands. You had to count down six decks for under 2.5 minutes or something, 2 minutes. And
I think it was less.
I don't remember.
And then it was way less.
You had to do that 10 times. And then you had the casino test, which you went out with the group and played smaller stakes, and that was kind of, it was a real life. They wanted to simulate real life situations as much as possible before, because once you get there, as we talked about before, once you get there and you have the real money and you see, you know, maybe next to you, the big player pulling out thousands of dollars. And if you're not used to that, then that can all of a sudden, your count can fly out of your head and he's suddenly buying in and you don't know, you know, we had that added. They wanted to add as much pressure as possible. So by the time you get there, it's easy. You know, the dealers are dealing at a normal pace and no one's shouting at you and just like, oh, I can do other things.
So there's the skill aspect and then the performance aspect. And those are two different things. So from the technical aspect, you know, we had to pass all those shoes. But then eventually, different things we had to do on different teams were, you know, the inclusion of deviations from what you would normally do. And for people listening, it's things that are outside of basic strategy, you know, deck estimation, true count conversion. So it got harder. And this is just in the realm of counting. We're just talking about counting here. So the tests were very rigorous that included all these different skills because exactly like Rosanna said, you have to be ready in a situation for anything to happen, but you can't be inaccurate. You had to be as
and then once you were tested, though, you weren't just out of the every time you had a trip, we had checkouts. Everyone had to go through
on
two shoes, a miniature version of that test every time. It was basically the table test.
And the final test, you would go to a casino and someone would count you down in the casino.
You would sit down in a casino with a more advanced player, and they would have them count down and make sure you know, ask you the count once in a while you're in a real play situation. Because actually, sometimes it's harder to count slower than fast. You know, when they go really fast, you know, at the practice, it's almost you start getting the rhythm of it. And then when you get to a casino and there's all these pauses, the dealer counting their rack and then things happening, and you can
get distracted.
I get more distracted when the dealer goes super slow. I cannot stand it. I mean, it's just because your mind goes a million miles a minute, and when I'm not completely focused, it's a lot hard. I love fast dealers. I mean,
so one of my first teams, we also had this procedure where you would go into the casino and they would watch, mm-hmm. you know, how much you bet, if you were betting the correct amount. And so I went out to do this test, and I went to the Golden Gate down on Fremont Street, and I was betting quarters, and I went in to get set up, and I started playing, and the guy administering the test, you may know, his name is Bill Benter. People may know him from horse racing. And Bill came
or the winner of the most recent Blackjack Ball Hall of Fame, but little things like that.
And Bill came in, he came up, this was a $1 table. He came up to the table and bought in for $3 and bet $1. And the pit boss came running down the pit and said, "You're not allowed to play here."
That's great.
Yeah, so we had to go find another place to test.
Yeah, that was definitely always an issue, too. Like, would the actual trainer be able to play long enough to be the overseer of the test?
Definitely.
How
Well, did you know each other before you got together playing blackjack?
Oh my gosh.
Rosanna?
So,
you should mention that we never really lived in the same
city. Oh yeah. So Joe and I have been together, or we've been
married.
Basically. We've been friends for many years, but we've actually never lived in the same city for more than 6 months. The first 6 months that we met, where it was like, you know, they say love at first sight. It was kind of like that, but with friendship. We were instant
Let's
friends.
Clarify, we are not together.
No, we
do love each other.
We were definitely, we called
not
it.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Absolutely. No.
I saw that Seinfeld episode.
Yeah. We were instant friends. So we both worked together at this pizza place. And I was in college. I was at Stanford. And as always, needed extra money. And so Joe and I worked there together. And we, you know, we ended up crossing paths, obviously, at work. And I had just come back from a trip to Italy. And I was there for the summer between semesters. And it was, you know, the best time of my life. And I was kind of readjusting to being back in the States. And she and I started talking about traveling because she had said that she lived in London a couple years back. And we were, you know, comparing stories about Europe. And I was talking about all I wanted to do was travel and all the places I had ever wanted to go. We started talking about, I said, oh, I want to go to London. And she said, yeah, we should go there together. And I said, I want to go to New York. And she said, yeah, you'd love New York, you know? And I said, oh, DC. She's told me she was from DC. And she said, oh yeah, you have to come to DC with me. And we named all these different places and maybe like five different locations in the world that we both wanted to go. And she looked at me and said, okay, Are you serious? Because we will do all of these things together. We will definitely. This was maybe one of our first or second conversation we ever had.
That's the important part. We hadn't spoken. This was our first conversation.
She looked at me and said, okay, we're going to do all these things. Mark my words. Within 1 year from that conversation, we had gone to all of those places together.
And it was seven.
I don't know how many. I don't know.
I do.
And I don't know how we did it because we were kind of, I would just graduated from college. I was still really broke and we somehow made it happen. And so she kind of, I guess, gave me this was my first impression of her was a person that could just make things happen. And that's kind of always been my impression. Like being on this show, for instance, like we were 2 months ago, we were talking.
This has been one of your life goals.
No, but we were talking about other things and blackjack, and she was saying how, oh yeah, you know, I'm gonna be on this podcast, and oh, you are too, we're gonna do this. And I said, okay, so here we are.
I'm the enabler.
So that was before. And so when she told me about the blackjack team, that's kind of why I just went with it and took her word for it, because everything she's ever told me ended up, you know, kind of changing my life in a positive way. So that's kind of how we met.
That's very nice, actually. Thank you. Yeah.
From the nice to the not so nice, have any team members ever ripped you off or that ripped the team off?
Well, I would just have to say it would almost be impossible for that to have never happened.
Yes. So I'll speak about a team we're calling the Sinatra Group.
Yeah, that was the second team we were on.
Second team we were on. We're on several, quite a number of teams, actually. I think
Did you have to have blue eyes to be on that team?
No. No. A lot of them did, though. A lot of us did.
Yes. So we were on many teams in our life, and this particular one, I had my suspicions based on inaccuracies of what a specific individual was saying, basically like where he was. And I remember I called one time, I think he was supposed to be playing, and he said, oh, I'm just up in the room, but there was like techno music in the background. So it's like, what kind of sound system do you have in your hotel room? He's like, I'm just grabbing something really quick. I'll be right back down to the tables. And I'm like, are you in a nightclub? Because I think, and so, okay, one time, okay, maybe he loved loud music in his room, but then there was some other inaccuracy. And then there was such reason to believe that there was misappropriation occurring, but the leaders of the Sinatra Group were completely not buying that story at all. I mean, a couple other people started mentioning, like, hey, you know, this might be happening. We should really look into it because results were pointing towards it. Inaccuracies were pointing towards that. And I don't make decisions based on intuition, but in this particular case, things were adding up a little weird. So, what the team finally, I guess, clued into, and I know you have something to add to this, but that was happening in general, and we were subjected to lie detector tests, and it was probably one of the craziest stories. We were at the Riviera when the Riviera was around, and we were all given the lie detector test by actually a famous personality who did lie detector tests on the Howard Stern show. Was just, I mean, this is again one of those stories that just doesn't seem real, but it is. And we all went through the tests, and the individual that we had suspected did not pass. And I think finally the leaders of the group realized that there was something going on, but the team sort of dissolved close to that time. But and it's hard to really say even if that was the impetus for that dissolution, but it was pretty crazy. So that's one example where it was pretty clear that that was happening.
So yeah, I can just add to that. I wasn't actually there for the whole lie detector thing. I don't know if it was after I was, I don't know. I wasn't.
So you don't know if you could pass a lie detector or not.
I don't think I was subjected to the lie detector because honestly, I actually won the most money on that team than out of everyone, which I
should have included everybody.
I'm very proud of that.
Win or lose.
So I think that was given respect. But no, the thing is that team in particular, I felt the whole time that I was, I didn't know everyone on that team personally. And the way it was structured, we didn't have group trips. We didn't all go gather in one place and, you know, do our checkouts and testing. And I didn't feel like I knew all of them very well. I knew, you know, I knew some of them.
Oh, it was a bad sign.
And so I felt, so I didn't, because I didn't personally know, I thought, you know, does, you know, any time where you're dealing with lots of money and everyone else isn't, you know, basically keeping eyes on each other with the money, then things can happen. And I don't know, you know, I didn't have any personal intuition as Joe did, but
just intuition. I'd want to
but
clarify,
no, no, but, was, but I, yeah. But I didn't, you know, I, cause I didn't have a lot of interactions with those people. And I think that part of the thing that makes a team successful is that camaraderie and the group mentality of being able to get together and really trust each other. And I think the only way you can do that is if you have that bond, which on the first team, which I felt like that was what made us so successful, is that we were all in it together. We were all, you know, we had group trips, and, you know, I didn't really see any reason to doubt because we were all in sessions together. And I don't really want to go into that team because, you know, we did have some issue on that team as well, which I think someone else might have talked about on this podcast before. But yeah, I feel like the second team didn't feel as unified as the first team. And I feel like that's kind of why maybe people felt more comfortable. Maybe one person, maybe more people felt more comfortable taking.
Management is a huge issue and a completely different skill set than actually playing. And I think you've probably had that experience to be able to manage a team and to just be able to play are completely different.
Management is a huge issue, and how to properly compensate someone for managing a team is a whole issue as well. And I think whenever teams get really large, and exactly what you were talking about, where everybody doesn't know each other and they aren't really friends. But I have to say that the situations where I've been ripped off are so much more devastating when it's someone that you feel is a friend of yours. You know, I've had, you know, we had a BP rip us off. He was supposed to go from Caesar's Tahoe to Harrah's Tahoe, which is like 100 feet. And he just never showed up. And had $20,000 of team money, and he apparently just went directly to the airport and left. And,
wow.
You know, I mean,
sorry.
But he was not a guy that was like a friend. He was a BP, you know what I mean? And yeah, that hurts, and you write it off. You lost $20,000. But it's so much more devastating when it's somebody that you felt like was a friend of yours and played with for years, and then, or a family member, you know, and they rip you off. You know, that's, yeah. So, but it's definitely, I mean, something that everybody who's been in Team Blackjack, I think, has experienced at one time or another.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've mentioned teams breaking up. What emotions did you go through? Was it like a marital divorce? I don't know if you've been through that or not. I have. What was the emotions like when a team broke up?
Do you want to take that? Or?
This is Rosanna.
I'm more than happy to.
I can say, kind of what I was talking about before, about having that bond with people. It's almost like family. I mean, I spent the first team that I was on, I spent so much time with these people. It was more than just, you know, going to a job and, you know, clocking in, clocking out. I mean, you're invested literally with the people, you know, and we'd been through so much together. Some of them, you know, we'd been tied to chairs together. We'd been, you know, handcuffed together. Not literally, but we'd been actually through a lot. So it's, yeah, I mean, when it kind of dissolves, I mean, of course, there's people you keep in touch with, but I feel like it is almost like a breaking up. I mean, I don't know. I've never been through a divorce, but it's like a, yeah, you're breaking, you have a loss. You have a sense of, you know, what do I do now? And yeah, so that's definitely, it was kind of a emotional.
When Nemesis broke up, I was completely devastated.
That was the first
team. The first team. And I hadn't.
You didn't have to have blue eyes for that
team. No. It was not a requirement. You know, it was so devastating because it was your first experience, or my first experience, our first experience. And it was such a powerful experience. And as you know, the things that happen on a blackjack team are unlike anything that happens in the world, the real, well, it's real, but you know what I mean, the outside world. And to have shared those stories and to make bonds with people the way that we did, and for it to all go away is just, it's shocking. And it's the question of, okay, what do I do now? I think it's probably similar to if you lose a job, or, mm-hmm. you know, if you lose someone close to you. It was terrible because we lost each other, and there was a lot of us,
right? And so you lost a big part of your social life as well,
right. Everything, yeah. Because yeah. you know, you're so emotionally,
you're traveling, and I was on completely different life schedule than some of my friends at home, because I was traveling on the weekends and working, you know, because blackjack trips were usually on weekends. And then when I come home during the week, you know, my friends were all working their, you know, 9-to-5 jobs or whatever. And so it was kind of the opposite of the standard regular life. And so, yeah, going back to the real world was kind of difficult for me, at least, because you know, you get used to this lifestyle and kind of almost like running, you know, or having your own business and doing, you know, planning what you wanted to do, and going from that to trying to, oh, now I have to make money some other way. And
yeah, no, that's very difficult. My current partner, Pincher, we talk about it as being the pseudo world versus the real world. And the things that happen in the pseudo world are so, the stories are so incredible that to lose all of that suddenly is just, it's just very, very difficult. So it also depends on how or why the team broke up too. That changes the emotion. Yep. So if it's just like, okay, we've run its course, that's one thing. It's like, okay, we acknowledge it's run its course. That's it.
Y'all got burned.
Yeah.
You can't play anymore.
Well, Sinatra, or like the first time that I stopped, it was like, okay, I'm getting out because I'm going to pursue this other,
right.
you know, this other thing. Yeah. You know, yes, that's much different than like you have some big beef or, you know, like one of my first teams, we broke up because we had just completely different ideas about the way things should be done. And we had a guy on the team who just had his own ideas, and he didn't think any of the rules that we all had agreed to applied to him, because he thought he knew better, he was smarter, he was a better player, you know? And So, you know, there were these long discussions about all that. And I'll tell you the other thing that was really difficult for me, and I would call it the loss of illusion. I really felt like prior to that breakup, we were a team, and I believed we all had as our primary focus whatever would be best for the entire team. And the moment there was a day when I suddenly realized that some of my teammates, oh, they're not interested in what's best for the team. They're interested in what makes the most amount of money for them personally. And man, that was a sad day for me. That was really a sad, sad thing for me to realize.
No, I definitely understand.
Definitely.
So one of the teams, I call it the techno team, you know, it just faded out. It was just a really slow dissolve. And so that one was a little bit, it was more like confusing. Like, are we
playing?
Yeah, what's happening here? So the slow fade out did not cause as much of an emotional
Well, I feel like reaction. For me, I feel like Nemesis kind of, that was our first team. And I feel like that kind of like ran its course. I mean, there were some things that happened, but everyone kind of knew that it was kind of leading down that road.
That team really sort of changed Las Vegas.
Yeah. I mean, we were definitely notorious. I mean, that was the...
Well, and the procedures changed. I mean, basically, you could not walk up to a table as a refusal and enter mid-shoe.
Oh, yeah. Anywhere.
Betting the max. Yeah. Anywhere. You know, you just couldn't do it anymore. So.
Yeah, they...
And that's their fault?
They definitely
specifically
changed.
These two.
It's my fault, for sure. I take personal responsibility for that a lot. But no, it definitely... I think it ran... I mean, for me personally, I felt like my kind of career had run its course at the end of that team. And I knew it was happening. You know, all of us were just getting blown out after blown out. I mean, it got to a point where we'd go for a weekend and, you know, we'd last for an hour or two here or there. And it just got to be almost not worth it, you know, to play because, you know, with all the...
Well, by the end, an hour would have been long.
I know. By the end, it was crazy. But I mean, and I think a lot of us, you know, I didn't personally keep playing. I ended up doing other things. And then until Joe recruited me for the next team. But yeah,
and the ride continues.
I definitely feel like it's, it's one of those things that you always know that your career, at least as a card counter, has kind of it's a miniature lifespan in compared to other careers. You know, that we'd always say blackjack years were like 7 or 8, you know, normal years in a normal job, you know, because, oh, you've been a professional card counter for 3 years. Oh, that's like 10 years. And at least that's as far as the big team play. I mean, it was impossible. It's impossible.
For a Stanford graduate, she just made a math mistake.
I don't know.
There's been a lot of wine
there
here.
There has been some wine. That's all I have to say. And I did not major in math, actually.
Yeah, so.
All right. So has your family always been supportive as to what you do? Joe, why don't you take this one first?
Okay. I do want to thank my mom. She's been very supportive. Everything I tell her, she is just like, oh, are you in the casino again? That's so cute. But it's crazy. She's never asked me questions about it. I wonder what she thinks. I just go in. I'm like, Mom, I'm an advantage player at one point. She's like, that's so sweet. I'm like, that's amazing. She actually just, it doesn't occur to her to ever ask me, Mom, I'm going abroad. I'm going to be playing. Oh, that game? The game you play? Yes, that game with those
the cards.
Rectangular flat things. She's a brilliant person. She was an architect and everything. I mean, it's crazy. She just doesn't care. But this story is true and crazy as well. My father, who's a pragmatic, I want to say world-renowned scientist, which is true. I don't want to say it. It is true. He and his bride, they staged an intervention for my gambling addiction.
Oh my God.
And I promise you, this is true. I have eyewitnesses, and this was probably one of the craziest things that's ever happened to me because we didn't even live in the same state.
So what happened?
Did they fly you out? What or what happened? Okay. Skype intervention?
And I'm going to end that story
No, not at all. So what happened? It looked like you were going to ask me a question. So this is where the wine took a turn. Yes. No, what happened is they show up and I am in California at the time and they're in Maryland and they show up, the two of them, determined. What happened is I don't exactly say how they got wind of what I was doing, but there was a way that they found out that I never told them. And it's a way that I can't believe it was the most unlikely probability of them finding out. But okay, they did. They decided that as a team, they were going to fly, not tell me, and show up at my door and stage an actual intervention. And so they came in and they're like, we know that you are a gambling addict. And
well, I'm
like,
wish they would have called me to
my gosh, this was so crazy. And I was like, you have to be kidding me. And by the way, I want to...
So clearly she's an addict in denial.
It's crazy how...
I think we brought you here, actually, to tell you something.
Yeah. No, listen, I want to point out, these are two PhDs, okay? And it's a very advanced form of science. It's not even like your typical...
Well,
this is
how is it that you had never told him? I mean, because you would think he would get it.
I knew that... Because it just wasn't the proper thing to do. It doesn't make any sense. Even though it makes sense mathematically, some people, cognitive dissonance, I believe, absolutely don't want to hear something that they don't want to hear. I could relate it to current day political climate. I won't. But did have to throw that in there.
You just did.
Oh, sorry. We can edit that. But you know what I mean. On whatever side you're on, I'm just saying. And they absolutely would not listen. So what happened is I tried to explain it because it makes sense. And I said, you're the source that you found out. If you would have paid more attention, you would have heard or seen that there's actually, this is advantage. I'm not out there playing slot machines and, you know, just out there gambling. And they're like, what did you do with the money that, you know, and they were asking me these questions that I'm an adult. First of all, this is my money. Second of all, it's not like I'm saying, Dad, can I borrow 200K and I'll be right back. I mean, it was absolutely bizarre. They made me join Gamblers Anonymous, which I didn't do, but they said, They wouldn't leave until I promised that I would join Gamblers Anonymous. And then they would check in with me periodically to ask how it was going. Well, what was great was I rolled with it. I was just like, oh, it's great. I've met so many great, because saying to them, I'm not doing this was not going to work. Saying to them, like, you're insane. You're a brilliant scientist. Listen to me. That wasn't going to work. So I had fun with it. I said, I'm learning all these things. And I was basically making fun of them to their face. And it was so ridiculous. And it just, and they were like, and then I remember I had some other seminar in Vegas and it slipped. I was going there. Remember, I'm an adult. And my father said, oh, you're going there. Just look down. Just look, don't look up, look down, as if that's going, this is a PhD. And I said, okay, I'm going to walk looking down, Dad.
Just don't go to any casinos, whatever
you do. Get to your destination. Learn the material you have to learn and quickly get to the airport. I'm just like, absolutely. And so he called later. How did it go? I looked down, Dad. I looked down. I mean, what is this? This is the craziest. It's absurd. It's absurd. And it's true.
Now, over the years, has any of this changed?
Oh, absolutely. No.
He still thinks you're...
Absolutely. I'm a recovering addict. Yeah, he has no idea I still play. He doesn't even understand.
Have you ever tried sending him a book like
you won't read it.
Thorpe?
You know? Cognitive dissonance. No.
I mean, is there any sort of mathematical field that he respects where if a PhD told him...
He's a brilliant physicist. He excelled in all things math. It doesn't make, he absolutely won't hear of it. He won't hear of it. And I won't try to convince people of anything in life when they are that narrow-minded. And I should also mention, and I won't
this is
go
terrible, Richard, who probably never be a listener to our podcast.
I know.
I want to say I lost a marriage to Blackjack as well, because this is related to, no, it's okay.
I like how that's a side note.
No, actually, I'm really glad you brought this up, because this is a major issue for a lot of people that are in advantage play. But now, Did you become an advantage player when you were already married to this person?
Nope. I was already an advantage player, and he knew going into it. I think he teamed up with my dad. No, he knew going into it, and he didn't like it. And he actually wanted me in the kitchen. No,
I think it was more of the travel thing that he didn't like, right? He didn't like.
Yeah, he did get in my suitcase a few times. He didn't want me. I was traveling. This is what, this is right. What he signed up for. So,
Some people get married thinking they're going to change the other person.
Sure, right. This is a lesson.
They know what it
that.
Is, and yeah, yeah.
Well, I have sort of the opposite situation. Yeah. It's very quick. My parents, they've always supported me, and I don't know if I even ever explained in detail what it was that I did, but they always kind of knew about it, and they, they always just knew that I was supporting myself, and, I didn't need their help, and so they figured, she's okay. And one time,
living in sin was all right with them.
They live in San Diego. They like to go to the casinos out there sometimes, play some slots. I've tried to get them off of the slots for years, but they, they just do it for fun. And so they, they don't have a problem with the gambling world. And actually one time they watched me play blackjack, and it was sort of a coincidence. I was going to this casino, and I was living in San Diego at the time, and I think they called me and asked me if I wanted to go to lunch or something. And I said, no, I'm going out to the casino and just for a little bit. And they said, maybe we'll go out there too and hit the buffet and maybe we'll see you. And I said, okay, I didn't really think I'd see them, when I was at the table, but, they kind of came up behind me, and I happened to be, luckily I was winning, and I was, I was betting, like $400 or $500 a hand or something. And I see my mom all of a sudden out of the corner of my eye, and she's kind of away from the table and trying not to, disrupt my focus or whatever. And she kind of waves, but she was afraid to interrupt me. And I just turned around, like, hi, mom. And I thought it was the perfect cover of I'm here with my parents, what could be going wrong? I think the best cover imaginable is to be, have your parents with you at a casino.
A lot of moms, you're betting $500. That sounds to them like real money.
Right. No, it did. But they knew the concept, and they knew that, I was playing smart, and I wasn't, just gambling. And, they knew that, my mom always, every once in a while, she says something to me like, I know you play really well and you're really smart, but just, sometimes, my friend, had a husband who had a problem, that she'll hear, she gets worried, but she knows, she knows that I'm not some crazy gambler. And it was just so cute that she was at the table, and later on she was kind of impressed, like, wow, you were doing things in your head and you turned around and talked to me, and she was kind of impressed with that. And
now, are you single?
I am single at the moment, yes.
I mean, because one of the issues that I have, you talked about losing a marriage. The reason I married my wife was because she got it. She understood that this was a business, and she was fine with it. You know what I mean? So, but prior to meeting her, that was a really difficult thing, was trying to meet somebody who would accept this business as a business and be okay with it.
It's definitely hard in terms of dating, because I know, I've been single kind of a lot, and just being, knowing when to start talking about it. And I mean, a lot of guys that I feel like, it's probably one of the differences again between men and women. I feel like women in general may be more conservative about money and more worried about things like that. But guys that I meet, when I tell them, about the black, most people know what card counting is, and when they hear about it, they kind of think it's cool, and one guy I dated, I met him playing poker, and he was, a recreational player. He wasn't a professional or anything. He had a regular job, and he knew that I played, I kind of played for a living at that point. And, I thought he was okay with it, but then he kind of started to give me signs that he wasn't okay with it. Like, he didn't want to talk about it in front of his coworkers. He said, oh, let's just tell them you do something else. He wanted, as soon as he wanted me to start lying about who I was, I just was like, okay, no, this is not.
But it is very easy for you to say I'm a writer.
Right. I don't like to put restrictions on myself. I think, sure. I'm not ashamed of who I am. I don't want to, you know, to put that restriction on. If I'm dating you and, you know, you're going to introduce me to your boss or something and you're ashamed to say that we met at a poker table. I mean, that's, I just think that.
Yeah.
I like to lie when I'm, you know, writing stories, but not,
not yeah, in real life. In my case, when I was single, these stories about winning $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever the number was really exciting. After we got married, the first time I lost $3,000 of community property. Boy, that was a whole different story. It was just, anyway, we're talking to Joe and Rosanna, and we're going to take a brief commercial break, and we'll be right back.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In December, most things in the casino are half price using points between December 17th and 24th, including rooms, meals, show tickets, New Year's Eve, tickets, bowling, movies, etc. The points do not have to be earned in December, although they may be if you like. This is a normal December promotion for the South Point, only it's hyphenated this year because the NFR rodeo was pushed back a little bit. Michael's Gourmet Restaurant is one of the best restaurants in town, albeit a bit pricey. During this half price with points promotion, it's a time for gourmands to get a great meal at a good price. There will be free video poker classes on Tuesdays beginning January 9th. The schedule may be found on bobdancer.com. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. Game of the week is Magic Deal Poker. Magic Deal is 10 coins per line game where periodically, before the deal, you receive 1, 2, or 3 Magic Deal cards. The frequencies of these cards depends on the game and pay schedule. These cards are completely wild, except they must become an actual card, meaning you cannot end up with 5 of a kind. The game is largely intuitive, given that you know the base game.
All right, we're back talking to Rosanna and Joe. Rosanna, Richard mentioned that you were a writer. Are you considering writing anything about gambling?
Yes, I am actually, as I mentioned before, so I was in the creative writing program when I started playing blackjack. I was going to grad school for creative writing, and I was always sort of, I'd always wanted to write about blackjack, but I was always nervous as I was playing because I, you know, signed this NDA and I wanted to protect my teammates' privacy, and we were still at the time very active. I didn't want to give away any trade secrets. And it's been so many years now, and I've told a lot of stories, all these stories and more, so many times over the years, and everyone tells me, you know, you should write them down, and I have been, and I'm currently in the process of writing a book, and so hopefully it will be out.
Do you have a title yet?
I do have a working title, but I don't want to state it yet because it could change in the process of publication. So,
any chance Richard and I could have you on the air after you write your book in order to promote that?
Of course, yes. I would be happy to be back.
That's the right answer. All right. There was a World Series of Blackjack. There was a UBT tour. Joe, you met Richard on these television programs. How did that happen?
So that was an amazing experience, that whole time period playing blackjack in that format. And, you know, it's a completely different game at that point. You're not playing against the casino. It's tournament strategy. It's completely different. So I really enjoyed that. I was on a few shows in that time period that, and always wore wigs and costumes to hide my identity, use different names. And yes, I was very fortunate to meet to meet you at that time.
We met there, and then you started, I guess through that, you met Max, and you started coming to the Blackjack Ball. So
yeah, that was great. I got to meet Max, Max Rubin. He is one of the most incredible people I've ever met. As you know, very dynamic, incredibly intelligent. I can't say enough about him, and I'm so fortunate to have met him. He's amazing.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, I think everybody who speaks about him has similar things to say. And I want to point out also that I actually named my son after Max Rubin.
Uh-huh.
I didn't name him Max Rubin.
That would be a little weird. But can we change the last name of our son?
Can we just make him Rubin, please? No, but I named Max. It's funny, I told him, and he was like, oh, that's great. It was so anticlimactic. I'm like, no, listen. I named a living being after you. He's like, that's so great. Thank you.
And then the father of the son didn't mind you naming this son after another guy.
Loves Max also. Perfect. So, yeah. No, but it's great. But these shows and that whole experience was just also a very surreal time.
It was bizarre, yeah. It was bizarre to have all these blackjack players, myself included,
on TV.
TV, yeah. It was so weird. But that was, you know, like, I think the third time I had retired from blackjack. I was in my retirement phase. And
your third one.
Yeah. And so I had agreed to do it. And yeah, it was very bizarre. But
I feel like it was a time that probably when a lot of the poker shows were going on, and maybe did they want blackjack to get started?
Well, yeah, there was this idea that they were going to try to turn tournament blackjack into like tournament poker, and that, you know, people might get sponsorship deals and all of this. Mm-hmm. And this was also kind of the height of internet gambling, which was
huge.
So lucrative. And so I really didn't care about going into casinos. Live casinos, because I could just sit at home and play in my underwear. And
oh, those were the days.
Oh, boy, were those the days.
Yeah. Oh, I miss those days.
That underwear all has holes in it now.
Yeah.
Underwear was optional. I mean,
I met really incredible people there. As you mentioned, all these unbelievable blackjack players were there, and some of my idols were there, and you included, by the way. And, you know, I actually ended up on a couple teams with some of the individuals that I met during that time period, which was really great. So it proved to be really, really an amazing experience.
What was your favorite part of being in the blackjack world? Either one of you. Rosanna.
Let's see. For me, it was so hard to say, but I think for me, it was definitely the people and just as a writer, you know, just I'm always trying to gather stories. And I mean, it was just the most perfect place to really obviously have some unique experiences. And as some of them I mentioned, and just come away with some amazing stories and just seeing, just meeting all these amazing, brilliant people that I, some of them I'm still in touch with today. And yeah, just seeing, you know, just meeting people that I never would have met in the real, you know, normal life, and just kind of, just having these experiences. And then also the challenge of it, just learning something that I never would have thought that I would do. Just kind of once I did that, everything else I know I can do after that. I mean, it's the ultimate in terms of being able to kind of hustle some of the biggest corporations in the world and be able to go in there and beat them. And I mean, there's nothing like that feeling of just knowing that you're doing something that no one else knows is going
on.
They
create the rules. Yeah. It's their game, their rules.
And
you go in and beat them.
And you walk in just having your own plan and just knowing, okay, I'm at this table. I have five other people at other tables, and No one knows what's going to happen next, but we all know what's going to happen next, and everyone's going to be a part of it. You know, it's like everyone's a part in your show. Yeah, just kind of creating these little scenes, and then knowing this guy's going to walk in with like a big hat on and some New Orleans beads and just run around the room and just, you know, cause a scene, and just knowing like, oh yeah, he's my friend and we're going to talk about this later and laugh about it. It's just funny, and pretending we don't know each other. So, yeah, just the whole, it's the closest I think I'd ever be to an actor. You know, that was the whole thing I love about
that. That was really well stated, actually.
The wine. I blame the wine.
You know, being surrounded by like-minded individuals from all walks of life, super intelligent, all there with the same goal. There's nothing else like it. And it's infectious. It's incredible just to be in that environment over and over again. And I think that, you know, that lends itself to the emotional collapse, you know, when a team that you really care about dissolves. Being around other blackjack players and working towards these goals together is probably one of the most, it absolutely is one of the most incredible experiences that I think both of us have, if I may speak for you. And, you know, the world of blackjack is really like this microcosm of the actual world. It's amazing all the things that you learn and you experience, and you learn compartmentalization. You learn
multitasking
things that, like I said, should be on a resume, but you can't really put it there. And right. You get to, you know, literally hang out and collaborate with people of all ages and races. And, you know, it's from everywhere. We were with, you know, teammates from Europe and teammates from South America and all Asia. over the country, and we were all in one place and we were all doing the same thing, and it was absolutely beautiful experience.
Yeah, one of the things, first of all, I have to say that a line that I have repeated many, many times is, I'm only in it for the stories. So I get that. But often for me, even better than being in the casino is being back in the hotel room at night with your teammates sitting around and talking about what if somebody did this? What if somebody did that? And these sort of ideas occur to you, and projects evolve, and then seeing something like that come to fruition.
And having these stacks of $100 bills on the bed.
Well, that always right. too, you know.
But no one mentions the money, but it's all about the money.
No, it's crazy. I mean, you've been there, especially when it is a successful session. And
yeah, especially when it's some sort of Mission Impossible thing, you know, where you
oh, God. Yeah, where no one is good at the casino, but somehow we managed to get the money somehow.
Plus, where else can you say I was running in heels away from a pimp and it actually be real?
Yeah, I hate it when that happens. Do either one of you have anyone you want to thank for your success at Blackjack? Rosanna.
I would like to thank my very good friend, Joe. Aww. For bringing me into this world. Cry. I'd like to thank my mom. Being there to support me at the table. I don't know. There's a lot of people that I want to thank, but I don't know who is okay with me saying their name. Yeah, so far, just everyone on Nemesis, basically. By the way, that's the name that I think, did we talk about that? That's the name that's is going to be in the book. So, everyone on that team is just amazing.
I am so grateful. Like I said, I really did not talk about this over the years, except for a few isolated instances, you know, especially to the person who doesn't understand this. It's just too much to go into. Recently, I told a couple of friends, but really over the years, I haven't. So it's great to be on the show, to be able to talk about these stories. I'm grateful to you as well. You are such an amazing friend, Rosanna. I want to say thank you to, of course, Max Rubin, who was a huge inspiration to me. And of course, Trevor, who I wouldn't be able to do this without. My mom, who doesn't really have any idea what I'm doing. Ben and Zoe Bullman, two incredible friends who have supported me through down times, up times. It's amazing. And most recently, Jeff McBride from the Jeff McBride Magic and Mystery School, and the fantastic master mentalist and magicians, Larry Ross and Tim. They're incredible. And I just really want to thank them for this beautiful journey we've been on.
So you're really into mentalism now? Are you planning to become a psychic or what?
No, I'm not going to become a psychic.
No, the reason I say that, I'm sort of joking here, but there was a time when I thought I might have to actually go make money outside of gambling. And I would joke to my wife that I was going to go set up on Venice Beach and read tarot cards. Right. That I would just do cold readings for people with tarot cards. Which
at $5 a pop or whatever it was?
Five. What are you, you know, this is Hollywood, maybe.
50.
50. 100. You know.
Well, Venice Beach is not an affluent place.
No, but hey, I don't know if you've ever experienced what these psychics charge people, but it's a lot more than $5. Oh, yeah. But anyway,
it actually is becoming a more affluent place lately. It's part of the Silicon Beach area now. Oh. It's very.
I told you I liked cards at a young age, and I have always been extremely passionate and enthusiastic about magic and mentalism, which is a type of magic. And I finally decided to pursue my dreams of doing magic and really learning the fundamentals, and then I went to the Jeff McBride School. It sounds like a commercial, but really, it was probably one of the most fantastic experiences of my life. Another group of there's a lot of parallels, by the way, between the people that are magicians and advantage players, so I must like that kind of group. Another group of like-minded, incredibly intelligent individuals.
Well, the other thing is there are people who I think do not fit into working at a 9-to-5 job, right? Magicians are a group of people that have found a way to make money off their talent, which is what blackjack players do or video poker players.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And think about it. They're studying, you know, misdirection, which is very, you know, something you have to do in the performance piece of blackjack, and you know, compartmentalization and keeping secrets. You know, we there's so many things that we haven't
as sleight of hand.
Sleight of hand.
Going south with chips. No, magic helped me tremendously in the casino for going south with chips. Absolutely.
Absolutely, right? So see all the parallels and
the loss rebates, you know, especially.
Yeah.
This is also the art of magic. Also, you get acknowledged more as your technique improves. Same with blackjack. You know, if you can do hole carding and all sorts of fancy things, you get acknowledged by your community. And, you know, the acknowledgement by your peers is the greatest reward. And magic is very, very similar with that. Huh. A lot of it is performance-based. There's technique and performance in magic and blackjack. So it seems natural that I'd be drawn to it, but it's fantastic. Another great group of people. And I really highly recommend that you go and learn from these masterminds.
Now, Richard and I have had the impression that these two ladies, the two shows we've done, are going to be very popular with our listeners. We're strongly thinking of twisting their arms and having them come back on the show again. But we need help from our listeners as to what questions should we ask them. And so if you have any questions you think we ought to ask these ladies, send them to either thegamblingwithanedge.com show after the podcast, or send us an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. They sound like the same place, but they're not. So it's been real fun with both of you. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Rosanna. I suspect we're going to be seeing you both again. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having us on the show. Rosanna, did you want to?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted, if you wanted any updates on my progress with my book, you can follow me on Twitter, @LeftyWriting.
Great.
It's lefty, like left-handed, and writing, like you're writing a book.
Very good. And thank you, Richard.
It's great to see you guys. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Go out and hit a lot of royal flushes, everybody. Goodbye.